Okay, welcome to this class this morning on procedures. Didn't used to be one of my strong points, probably still isn't, but I see the value of it more now than I did before. One thing that's interesting that I noticed is that you'll see quite a bit of overlap between this topic today on procedures and Brother Derek's topic yesterday on prepare. It goes together. 1 Corinthians 14:40 says, let all things be done decently and how? In order. That's what procedures are. It's just giving us order. In your handout there, one definition that I like, a procedure is a course of action, a way of doing something, how we make rules work. So, if you're a little bit confused, well, what's the difference between a procedure and a rule? Think of it this way. I've heard teachers say, this year we're not going to have very many rules. The only rule we're going to have is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, that's a good rule. How exactly are we going to make that work? You just need procedures. I guess you don't have to call them rules. But if I don't want all four or five of you on the front row to be talking at the same time, somehow we're going to have a procedure to make so that you have a chance to listen to him and he has a chance to listen to you. We need a procedure for that. That's why often the procedure is raise your hand before you talk. So, procedures just help to make rules work. So you might say, where do I start? Start with me. And here's where we overlap a little bit with yesterday. Be self-disciplined. A teacher needs to be able to have procedures of their own before you can somehow make this work for someone else. You need managing time. If managing time has been an issue for you before, now's a good time to get started with really making time management practical. Take time to read your Bible, pray every day. It takes some self-discipline to make that happen, but it can happen. Another thing, we heard this mentioned briefly yesterday, is be temperate. Temperance is a fruit of the Spirit. Be temperate in sleep. And remember, I like the definition for temperance. It says temperance is the right amount of good and none of the bad. Now, so you understand with sleep, you could sleep too much, or you can sleep not enough. Temperance in the way that you handle your money, temperance in the food that you eat, temperance in how much you use your phone, how much coffee you drink. Go ahead, enjoy it. But your children observe this. You know, for instance, drinking more coffee isn't the way to make up for my intemperance in the amount of sleep I got last night. So we need to be able to apply this and make it practical. One thing that I've observed is that this whole thing of temperance has something to do with teacher longevity. I guess most occupations are this way, but school especially seems to be, the work will expand to fill whatever time you allow for. And if that's 14 hours a day, there's not just a lot of 14-hour-a-day teachers that teach as a career. There might be a few. But you're going to have to learn to manage your time and be temperate. We need, this is just kind of a bonus idea, but as I'm here this week, I keep hearing of another school and another school and another school who still doesn't have their teachers, and we start in just a few weeks. Now, I want you to just think with me. What if each one of you, instead of teaching 2 years, would teach 3 years? We would need 40 less teachers 1 year. Just because you're teaching one more year. If each of you taught 5 more years, don't laugh at me. But if each of you taught a few more years, imagine the difference that can make. And young men, I'm going to speak especially to you right now. You're thinking, yeah, but there's no way I could have a family on school teachers' wages. And you know what? I don't know. Some schools might pay more than mine does, but you're exactly right. But I'm here to tell you that God can provide in ways you never dreamt of.
Amen.
Thank you. Here's just a little personal example, and I probably wouldn't share this. Joel, don't go home and tell all my secrets, okay? I'm going to tell a few things today that I want you to be really discreet with. But this past summer, we had 2 weeks when work dried up. And I don't get paid during the summertime when I'm not teaching school. And it happened to be the same 2 weeks when the truck gave out, the van gave out, the freezer gave out, and my wife really wanted a cooler in the house. Now, here's the interesting thing about that. We've got a man from the community that comes to our church, and he's hard of hearing. And I'm one of the few people in church who just kind of doesn't care because I'm hard of hearing too. So Dale and I will sit there after church and we'll holler at each other in a friendly fashion. And sometimes even the rest of the auditorium kind of quiets down just to hear what Verlin and Dale are talking about. But here's the interesting thing. So I write down notes of the whole message, and then after church I give it to him. And often I'll write down what we're doing at home and so forth too. Dale started taking $100 bills, and he rolls them up really tiny. And after church, if he can't quite reach me, he'll reach over the back of the bench behind me and just drop that thing down there. Anyway, I feel like God sent Dale at just the right time. Last few weeks after I had cash again, he didn't do it. And so, now that was a bunny trail, but use temperance, and God will provide. God can help you through those times. We need long-term teachers. Okay, back from our bunny trail. Holy. Be holy. I got to go on a trip back east. And those of you who travel from the east to here know it's a little stretch back there, and we don't get back there often. But we got to have a family reunion. See family we haven't seen for a while. Then we stopped in Kansas where I grew up. Got to see family that I haven't seen for a while. Got to visit former students and see people from the community that I hadn't seen for 20 years. Some of them. The interesting thing to me is there were some people who, well, let's just say they didn't have the advantages that some of us have. And people who at the time looked like they really were making, they messed up, maybe financially, things just weren't going well for them. But there's something interesting, a pattern that I noticed. Those who love the Lord with all their heart could make some of those choices. They weren't necessarily right or wrong, but they sure looked bad at the time. But the way things turned out for them and their families, beautiful. Because they love the Lord with all their heart. And in your classroom, You'll make some mistakes. We heard about that this morning in devotion. I really appreciated that. Get back up and keep going. But strive for holiness. There's no substitute for that. Let's continue. Here's why we need procedures. Procedures are biblical. In the Old Testament, God said, love the Lord your God with all your heart. And then it was so interesting. My students and I were studying the tabernacle. The tabernacle has a number of entire books of the Bible that essentially go through procedures in how God wanted them to love him with all their heart. Now, in the New Testament, we have probably less of that. But if you stop and think of even some of the ordinances that we practice, they're more of a procedure. This is how you apply this. And so procedures are biblical. It's part of that decently and in order thing. Procedures teach the importance of following instructions. We heard the other day about if it says underline and use circle, what do you do? Well, that's a procedure. But they teach the importance of following instructions. Procedures teach disciplines needed later in life. And here's something that I feel like I've been learning. I used to say, the larger the group, the more procedures you need. And there's a certain amount of truth to that. However, I heard one of my children just recently say that when I get to the place where I can do some of my high school work at home, I can do it on the couch in my PJs at 10 o'clock in the morning if I want to. Well, Dad had something to say about that. And here's one reason why. I've noticed a number of, let's say, homeschool families or even small schools. We're just kind of going to be family. Let's be casual about this. And yeah, you can do your homework in your PJs if you want to. But you come back to this. Procedures teach disciplines needed later in life. And they're going to need the discipline of getting up at a certain time, getting dressed, preparing, being diligent. So you're doing them a favor, even if you have a small school, to have a certain amount of procedures in place. Procedures minimize confusion. That's why in the lower grades, they often line up. That's why when we stand up, we stand on this side of the desk. That's why when we go to recess, we do it this way. They did just minimize confusion. Procedures help a group to work as a unit. I wrote a few procedures on the back side of this paper that you have, but I want you to think a little bit. If we have time later on, I want to talk about procedures that you've noticed here. And they've got some good ones. Help us work together as a unit. Procedures provide a secure learning environment. There's something that I've noticed. The teacher that taught before me used to have quiet art classes. I used to have chaotic art classes. In art, you know, if they say, oh, look, my cow looks like she has a fifth leg. And pretty soon, oh, yeah, and he gets sillier and sillier and louder and louder. And we don't get much art accomplished. And so my first couple of art classes were silent. And they wanted to say something, they'd raise their hand. And we got art done. And I said, you know what? This is okay. And so I think I loosened up a little bit, but I've tried to keep that order in art class, and we learn more. And that's just a beauty of procedures providing a secure learning environment. And especially if you have those where more action kind of stirs them up, that secure learning environment just kind of goes out the window. So we need those. So you're saying, okay, what exactly are we talking about? Okay, we're getting to that. First, I want to make a little pitch. Jonah referred to this book, Handbook for Creative Teaching, yesterday. You'll notice that we have a few of them up here. I bought a whole case, and my intention is to give them to you as a gift. Okay, if you don't have one personally, or don't think your school has one, you need one. I'm not saying you should go read 900 pages before school starts, but I am going to give you a list of pages here that you should read before school starts. I'd like to just make sure that each little section here has books of that section. And then after class, anytime in the next week here, you come to me. Here's my book. You come to me and say, Ms. Miller, I'd like to have one of the books. And it's yours. So, we get to this place. We aren't sure how to start with procedures. First of all, find out what is already in place, and then start strong. Find out how they do things in the school that you're going to. Go to page 473 in your handbook. If you have a handbook, please just open it. Page 473. And I noticed when I went to look at procedures, there wasn't much under that in the index back here. So I had to be a little creative and figure out what they're calling procedures and so forth. At one place they call it codes of behavior. Okay, so you just have to kind of talk their language. But don't give up. The answer is probably in here somewhere. Page 473 has a list of 45 questions to ask last year's teacher or the school board. And many of these questions are just, how do you do this type of a question? They may be type of questions that you won't think of until you're halfway through the first day of school and need the answer to the question. So if you can ask it now, if you have an opportunity to ask the former school teacher, ask them. If not, ask one of the board members. And don't feel like you have to go through this whole list. I'd say look at these, figure out the questions that you really need answers to, write them on a notebook piece of paper, and then next time you visit with your school board, ask them these questions. And you know what's going to happen? The man's going to go home. He's going to tell his wife that night, I think we got a good one. You don't have to tell him where you got it. But this will give you such a head start. One of the things that I'd encourage you, so when you find out how they do things, don't be quick to change it. I'll give you a personal example. I got to the place where I'm teaching school now there in Red Bluff. And the school custom was for all the students, to have a water bottle on their desk. Now, you might have not had experience with teaching so far. What's going to happen? It's going to fall off. Or they're going to sit there nursing it. And so the first thing I wanted to do is say, hold on, this process has to stop. This is not how we do things. But I learned something. As I was asking questions before school, a water bottle on your desk is an inalienable right in Red Bluff. You don't touch that. And so I kind of had the choice, either back down or cause waves. And I don't know, as first-year teachers, you just don't need to be causing waves. Just have the humility to accept that and deal with it. That's one practical way that it was good for me that I knew that before school started. Don't start visionary campaigns that most of the parents won't support. Water bottles would be that example. If I came from a school that had an excellent music program, and the first day, this is awful. We've got, and so I really make radical changes when that's really not that important to the parents. Just go slow. Posture, greetings in the morning. Start in fairly easy. Those are changes that can come over time. Now, go to page 580. This is where they call it codes of behavior, but this is just procedures. Notice rule number one. You see it there? Somebody read it to me in the front row on this side. Oh, never mind. You don't have it. That's okay. Could you read it, Jeffrey? Codes of behavior number one.
Pupils must not run in the halls, stairs, or classrooms.
Okay. You knew that already, right? Okay. Don't run in the halls, on the stairs, in the classroom. Okay. That's a procedure. This is how we do things to keep from hurting other people, for one thing. So look through these 19 things and decide how you're going to do that. One of the things, here's an example. Did you know it is possible to eat a sandwich with two full pieces of bread in four bites? And it takes about a minute and 30 seconds. Then you can go play softball. Unless you're from Mr. Miller's school. You need to kind of think of things like that. For us, you're going to sit at the table for 15 minutes. And then we go play softball. It really kind of cuts down on the motivation to get that sandwich inside you that quickly. But that's just a practical example. Have a chart for picking games at recess time or some system. For our school, for the younger grades, we have a rule: if the temperature is below, I forget what it is for them, this temperature, you wear a jacket. They see the big, tough eighth graders, you know, no jackets out there. They want to be like that. And it just saves the confusion. Look at the thermometer. You don't have to ask me. If the temperature is below this level, then you wear a jacket. So, go to page 485. You're wondering, but what about this first day? How does all this work? These are step-by-step procedures for the first day. One of the things that I think we need to talk about a bit is often, these first day procedures in passing out the books and getting things started don't take as long as you think they're going to take. And suddenly, they're finished with what you had for them, and there's still 20 minutes left in this period. What will you do? So just reading this will help you to think through how long this is going to take. Always have extra work for them. One of the things that I plan to do next week when I get to my classroom is make a stack on each student's desk of the school books that they're going to be beginning in this year. Then, number one, I know it's there. I know somebody didn't miss ordering it. And then number two, I can go ahead and make my schedule. I make a schedule for the whole first month. And that schedule is mostly saying, do this lesson this day in math, do these pages in science. But at least I know what I need to study and prepare for. And then our class usually goes around the circle and tells something interesting that we did this summer. And I know already some of mine have some interesting stories to tell. We look forward to that. And then you know what we do next? We get started. And I think that's something good to remember on that first day. Talk for a while, but don't make your speech too long. And just get started. Now, so how do I introduce these procedures? I wrote down on your handout, introduce them properly. Introduce only what you need at the time. If you'll notice, Brother Conrad did that this year here at WFTI. He didn't begin the morning by saying, okay, now for lunch, I'd like for you all to go back this way. He gave us instructions on how to get to our classes. And then at lunchtime, he told us this. So in the morning, put your lunch box here. This is going to be your spot. But don't worry about explaining recess yet. Just explain what we need right now to get started. At recess time, say, at recess, we will do it like this. And then when it's lunchtime, say, now for lunchtime, we will do it like this. Just one interesting observation on recess time. Let's say that you've decided that you file out like this, and they filed out like this. We're just crowding and too fast. Next recess. I noticed we needed a little practice on this. So file out, and then we're going to come back in. And we're going to file out again. Now, my second, third grade boys don't enjoy practicing filing in and out when it's recess time. So it kind of cuts down on how much practice we need. Let's continue here. Get their attention. I was at a family reunion where my father-in-law, Chester Weaver, wanted the attention of the family. And we had a lot of silence until all of his children and grandchildren got quiet. He was not going to start while one mother was still off there talking to her baby, or one grandchild was still running around out there. I'm a teacher, and I got nervous at a family reunion because it was quiet so long. But it made an impression on me. When he started, everyone heard what he had to say. Can you say that as a teacher? Or do you just start in? I think it was an important thing for me to just observe. Maintain discipline quietly but firmly on the first day. And when I'm saying this, I'm not saying, oh, he forgot to raise his hand, spanking. But I'm just saying, keep reminding. You think, well, I want my students to like me. Guess what? They'll like you if you follow through with what you told them is going to be the way we do it. They'll respect you for that, and they'll feel more comfortable that way. Use procedures to make your multi-grade classroom more efficient. Hand out or post weekly assignments, and I'm speaking now to upper grade teachers. But I pass out their assignment for the week. I expect upper graders to go ahead and get started on their lessons without me teaching every lesson. I kind of know which lessons have bumps in the road, but there's no reason a seventh grader shouldn't be able to look at his math book and get started on his lesson. Sometimes they'll have questions. But I'll be honest, I'm a little bit nervous about Friday. They said I'm supposed to speak for 12 minutes to one math class. It's been a long time since I've done that. Because I have six different lessons. If I speak 12 minutes on each one, well, by the time we got to the end of the school day, we'd be going to 6 o'clock. So the students need to know how to study on their own. Ron Staff introduces an SQ3R method. Survey, question, read, recite, review. And one of my high school students told me, at the end of the school year, you know, I started trying that last week and it really works. Yeah, that's what we've been trying to say the last 3 years. But get an overview of the lesson and then ask yourself a little bit, where are we going with this? And just, if a good way to do that is turn forward and see what questions they ask about the lesson. And then read it. You'd be surprised how many try to skip this. And then recite is just like answering the questions. And we do some of that in class, some of it on paper. And then review, so it sticks. Ah, it's amazing. It works. If you have more than 3 students in a grade, develop a system to do some scoring in class, especially with upper graders. I've noticed that with just 2 or 3 students, it's time-wise, it barely pays to try to score in class because I can score it more quickly later on. Older students can check their own daily math lessons. I usually spot check, and then I check all the quizzes and tests. I just encourage you to remember that procedures don't stop at 3 o'clock or whenever your students go home. Teachers can waste a tremendous amount of time between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock. I've taught with some very interesting co-teachers, but whew, you can burn a lot of time visiting after school. And you can burn a lot of time catching up with what's happening on your phone during the day, because remember, you're not going to be using it during the day. And after a while, it's 4 o'clock and you haven't started checking yet. I taught with an older lady. We team taught in the same classroom. And she would lay out all the answer keys, all the tests that need to be graded, all the students' work that need to be graded. And she would sit down and just, and she was done. So orderly. And so I tried to adopt some of her methods, and it's been a real blessing. Now, exit singing. I like to sing a song at the end of the school day. It's a cheerful way to end it. Be prompt with that. Go to the parking lot. Talk to the parents. We already talked about that last night. Visit with your co-teacher so that you can feel good and comfortable about it later. I sometimes don't visit with my co-teacher enough and realize there's some bases we should have covered that we didn't. But if you don't, on the other hand, go home thinking, wow, I took a lot of their time and my time, and I should just use temperance. Now you're wondering, but what if they don't listen? I taught under a school board chairman. He loved to tell this story. He said, I had a classroom of upper grade students, and they were out of control. And I did, you know, I just couldn't stand it. He said, one evening I went home, I got counsel, I prayed about it, and I had a plan. And I went back to school the next day, and nothing happened. Nothing happened for the rest of the week. He loved to tell that story. Why not? It's because he was prepared. He knew what was going to happen next. And there's something that students sense about that. One thing that can work, CLE has a system of demerits and detentions. How many of you are at all familiar with that? Okay, good. My first year of teaching, it didn't work for me. I came home and said, the system is broken. And then, I'm not sure, I think it may have been Jonathan Erb, asked me a hard question. He said, have you been consistent with it? And I got to thinking a little bit. No, I wasn't. So any kind of procedure that you have like that, in trying to keep order, you need to be very consistent. Somewhere on your paper, write that down. Some people just use marks on the board. Be careful. If those marks mean missing recess, I hate to see that little guy that's behaving because he needs to burn energy have to stay in for recess. So be careful about that. Check yourself. Was I clear? Am I an orderly example? Is my desk organized? Am I prompt? Am I focused? We heard a little excuse this morning. Well, that's just how I am. For instance, if you say I'm grumpy in the mornings, hopefully that's not true, but ask yourself, has me being grumpy in the mornings been a blessing or a curse to those around me? And suddenly you realize this is something I need to take responsibility for. This is something I need to repent of. Instead of making excuses for, that's just how I am. Has it been a blessing or a curse to those around me? Don't lecture when you should be disciplining. So I have students on the playground. And the upper graders are just mowing down lower graders in Dare Base. Okay, little grease spot, that used to be a first grader, that used to be a second grader. And so I go home and I prepare a devotional about being kind and considerate to others. And I am profound about this. And it's recess time, and we go out, and it continues. And I say, boys, remember what we talked about this morning? We've got a little deal at our school. You're poor sport, or you start playing too rough, and Mr. Miller goes like that. And there's not really a lot more discussion about this. That means go stand by the fence until you get this. But what if my team's going to lose? I mean, that's why we were mowing people down in the first place. But that's it. And you know, just having that procedure, it's not personal. It happens to anybody who does it. And it can be effective. In games especially, this comes out. But it was his fault. He did it first. I had it first, or whatever it was. He touched me. No, he didn't. The who had it first, he touched me, or I think I was on base, and all that stuff. Trying to figure that out exactly will never bring a student to the need for the cross. What I'm saying is, it's a hard thing. We need to repent of our selfishness, and then we can go on from that. When is it time to spank? I know you hate to hear that word. And I don't want you to think that we spank a lot in our school. In fact, I'm going to tell you a story in a minute about that. But, and you've heard people say don't discipline for procedural things that they do wrong. Just discipline for the breaking a rule. Well, I got a rule in my school that says don't break the procedures. So, but what I'm saying is, if he heard and understood you clearly and continues to challenge you to wait before he does it, to make excuses, it's probably time to spank. You say, well, I don't know how. Hey, I got a little answer for you here. Just open your book to page 683. You'd never believe it. It's in there. It's in there. 683. A few suggestions to follow. Spank a child when he needs it, not when you feel like giving it to him. There's some real nuggets in here. My co-teacher came to me, and we've been having continued conversations about a young man who was not obeying. And finally, said, you know, it's time to spank. We've talked to parents, we've done this. It's time to spank. Oh, she did. She'd have rather had one herself. And so we got to thinking about this, and finally she understood it needed to happen. And she said, but where do you spank? Now, I admit I was kind of buying time, and I said, well, first of all, I just haven't put their hands on the chair like this. And I'm trying to think of a delicate way to say where on the anatomy you spank. And all of a sudden, her face turned kind of red. She said, no, I mean, what room do you take? It's another one of those things, speaking the same language. But if it's something you haven't done before, read this book and then just talk to someone who has experience. But when it needs to happen, be sure it can happen. One other thing, don't try to follow someone else's plan exactly. You'll need to discover procedures that you're comfortable with. I came home from WFTI one year. I had a fairly new teacher that I was teaching with, and there was a brother here that was just super interesting to listen to. Now, don't. You could probably figure out who it was. But we came home, and this very formal, prim and proper teacher was going to sit down in a fairly prim and proper first and second grade classroom and do like this man said he does, that has worked wonderfully for him at school. She was going to think about sitting on the front edge of her desk and asking her students, so how do you think we should handle this problem at recess time? Now, you have to understand that, first of all, that wouldn't have been a great idea to handle first and second grade students like that. Second, it was totally not her method or way or something she felt comfortable with. Don't you try to be a Jonah or whoever it is. You just be you and have procedures that you feel comfortable with, that you can be, what's the C word? Thank you. Consistent with. Procedures need people that are consistent with. Here in a not very long, we're going to observe one of the procedures that I love at WFTI. It's lunchtime. And And I never cease to be amazed how they can put the whole mass of us through those food lines so quickly. I mean, we barely have time to finish before we're finished visiting before we're through. It's beautiful. But it's because they follow procedure. And I want to say, if we benefit from that, how much more can our students benefit from well-thought-out procedures to help them to feel secure and accomplish learning? Feel free to take time to read some of those procedures that it says a few procedures I use. Not all of them came from my classroom, but that's just an example of some. Thank you for your attention today.